Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shamakum Radha Kum Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Sri Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Tulsi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Sankirtan Jagna Ki Jai Sri Hatmadanga Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Premanande Samaveda Bhaktavinda Ki Jai All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Sri Guru and Guru. By divine arrangement, I was late, or by my maya, but boy, what a kirtan. Perfect arrangement. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 87, chapter is entitled The Prayers of the Personified Vedas, and today's text is 20. Sakrita Pureshvamu Vamishva Bahir Antara Sambharanam. Anyway. Krita Pureshvamishva Bahir Antara Sambharanam. Tava Parusha Vadantyakila Shakti Drito Nishakritam. Iti Nigatim Viviksha Kavayo Nagama Vapanam. Bhavata upasate ngrim abhavam bhuvi vivashita. Sakrita pureshvamishva bahir antara samvaranam. Tava purusham vadanta kila shakti. Jitam sakritam. Iti nigat katim viviksha kavayo nigam avapanam. Bhavata upasate ngrim abhavam bhuvi vivashtitaha. Vaishnavis. Vaishnavis, okay. Because it's a little late, I'll just read through by myself the word for word in the translation. Swa by himself, Krita created, Pureshu in the bodies, Amishu these, Abahi not externally. Antara, or internally. Samvaranam, whose factual development. Tava, your. Purusham, the Vinanati. Vedanti, the Vedas, say. Akila, of all. Shakti, energies. Dritta, of the possessor. Amsa, as the expansion. Kritam, manifested. Iti, in this manner. Nri, of the living entity. Gatim, the status. Viviksha, ascertaining. Kavaya, learned sages. Nigama, of the Vedas. Avapanam, in the field in which all offerings are sown. Bhavata, your. Upasate, they worship. Angrim, the feet. Abhavam, which caused the cessation of material existence. Bhuvi, on the earth. Vishvashita, having developed faith. Translation purport by the followers of the Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Purport. Not only does the Supreme Lord remain totally uncontaminated when he resides within the bodies of the conditioned souls, but even the infinitesimal jiva souls are never directly touched by the coverings of ignorance and lust they acquire while passing through repeated cycles of birth and death. Thus, the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.10.5 proclaims, Sayas Chayam Purushe Yas Chavas Chashav Aditye Sa Ikaha. The soul of the embodied living being is one with him who stands within the sun. Similarly, the Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.7 teaches Tat Tvam Asi. You are non different from that supreme truth. In this prayer, the personified Vedas refer to the finite enjoyer of material bodies, the jiva soul, as an expansion of the transcendental reservoir of all potencies, the Supreme Lord. The term angsa, kritam, made as his portion, must be properly understood, however, in this context. The jiva is not created at any time, nor is he the same kind of expansion of the Lord as the omnipotent Vishnu Tattva expansions. The Supreme Soul is the proper object of all worship, and the subordinate Jiva soul is meant to be his worshiper. The Supreme Lord enacts his pastimes by showing himself in innumerable aspects of his personality, whereas the jiva is forced to change bodies whenever his accumulated karmic reactions so dictate. According to Sri Narada Pancharatra, yatatstam tu chidrupam swa samvedyad vinirgatam ranjitam guna ragena sajiva iti katyate. The marginal potency who is spiritual by nature, who emanates from the self-cognizant samvit energy, and who becomes tainted by his attachment to the modes of material nature, is called the jiva. Although the jiva soul is also an expansion of Lord Krishna, he is distinguished from Krishna's independent Vishnu expansions by his constitutional position on the margin between spirit and matter, as the Mahavaraha Purana explains. Samsa chitta vibhinamsa iti dvita sa ishyate amsino yattu samartyam yatsarupam yatastiti tadeva nanu matropi vedam swamsa sino kvachit vibhinamso lupa sakti sat kinchit samartya martrayuk. The Supreme Lord is known in two ways, in terms of his plenary expansions and his separated expansions. Between the plenary expansions and their source of expansion, there is never any essential difference in terms of either their capabilities, forms, or situations. The separated expansions, on the other hand, possess only minute potency, being endowed only to a small extent with the Lord's powers. This conditioned soul in this world appears as if covered by matter internally as well as externally. Externally, gross matter surrounds him in the form of his body and environment, while internally, desire and aversion impinge upon his consciousness. But from the transcendental perspective of realized sages, both kinds of covering are insubstantial. By logically eliminating all material identities, which are misconceptions based on the soul's gross and subtle coverings, a thoughtful person can determine that the soul is nothing material. Rather, he is a pure spark of divine spirit, a servant of the Supreme Godhead. Understanding this, one should worship the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Such worship is the fully bloomed flower of the tree of Vedic rituals. One's realization of the splendor of the Lord's lotus feet, gradually nourished by the offering of Vedic sacrifices, automatically bears the fruits of liberation from material existence and irrevocable faith in the Lord's mercy. One can accomplish all this while still living in the material world. As Lord Krishna states in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Matura Mandalayastu Jambu Dvipa Stito Tava Yo Chayat Pratimam Prati Sa Me Priyartaro Bhuvi. One who worships me in my deity form while living in the district of Matura, or indeed anywhere in Jambudvipa, becomes most dear to me in this world. Srila Sridharaswami prays, Twad amsasasya mame shana twan maya krita bandana twad angri sevam adisha parananda nivartaya. My Lord, please free me, your partial expansion, from the bondage created by your maya. Please do this, O abode of supreme bliss, by directing me to the service of your feet. Translation again, the individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he's created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Om Gana Timananda Shaganjana Shilakaya Chakshur Umitam Gena Tajmai Shi Guru Vinaya. So the translation starts out in kind of an interesting way. The living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he's created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. Now, if you could just introspect, and how many of you actually feel that you're not covered by either gross or subtle matter? I mean, Kali Flani does that. Probably after that kirtan, you know, he just got completely cleared away. Think about it. I mean, it's pretty uncommon for us not to identify with our minds, in particular, or with our bodies. You know, it's a little bit, you know, it's not a very common expression that we see that we're not covered. Usually we hear we are covered. So, try to distill the essence of what the Shrutis are explaining here. Prabhupada uses in a couple places an example of how oil and water, even though they are maybe together in the same container, they don't actually mix. And this is in perfection of the path of perfection. He describes this. And then in a letter to Chidananda in 68, he describes how when air becomes mixed with dust, they're really still, it's still air and dust. They don't chemically combine. They remain the same. Another example is like with water. If it becomes all muddy, but then you put it in a filter and you take the mud, you take the particles out. I think scientists call it a colloidal suspension. You know, where all the little particles, they become suspended in this other substance. But then, you know, if it just sits for a while, then those particles will start gathering on the bottom of the container. So even though we're in this material world and we're within these bodies, there is this essential, characteristic. We're eternally parts and parcels of Krishna. We're of a spiritual nature. In Gita 7th chapter, after Krishna explains Bhumirapo nalo vayu kam mano buddha evacha ahankara ityam bina prakritir ashtada, these eight energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these separated material energies. And then he goes, then Krishna explains, Apariyam itastvanyam prakritim virime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam dayate jagat. So that, there's another spiritual energy that's comprised of the individual living entities. And they're exploiting this material energy. So that's us. Right? We're jivas. And then again, there's 15:7, Maimai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manashastran Indiani Prakriti Stani Karshati. That, the conditioned soul is my eternal fragmental part. He's struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. Okay, so If one understands that actually these coverings are temporary and then my eternal position is that of servant of Krishna, that's really where I belong. You know, there's some mess up that I made. I misused my free will and I got all entangled in this business. But if we can actually realize, can actually, you know, have this kind of faith, we have this knowledge that we're eternally Krishna's servant, what happens? If we have this knowledge, then we understand this, at least to some extent, then we become, the translation of these learned sages, become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet. Become imbued. They become completely inspired with faith. So, this is, you know, this kind of faith, or this imbued with faith, it sounds a little bit like the resolute determination that's described. Not a little bit, but that's essentially what it is. The resolute determination that's described in Bhagavad Gita 241, Yavyashyatmika Buddha, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, Bahushaka Yanantascha, Buddhayo Yavyashyayinam. So those who are resolute in determination, let's see, how does it go? Those who are on this path are resolute in determination, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, those who are irresolute, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. Bahushaka, Yanantascha. So, then the purport, Prabhupada says, the resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based upon knowledge. So this is, you know, this is the driving force in Vedic culture, knowledge. And where does the knowledge come? It comes from Shastra. There's this conviction. Okay, Shastra is saying it. Modern culture, you know, knowledge is based upon the mind, right? If the mind tells me to do it, I'm your servant, dear mind. You know, this is kind of, we're mind bhaktas in Kali Yuga. This is pretty much, and this is what we've got to turn around, you know, through the process that Srila Prabhupada's given us. So, at the end of the purport of the Vyashyatmika Buddha, Prabhupada describes the whole process, it's a process of Krishna consciousness. However, it depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. It really connects with today's verse. Not theoretically, but practically. When there's no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who's not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. So this whole question of knowledge, you know, it's a very, very important issue. And I think it's chapter 3 of Nectar Devotion. The chapter is entitled Eligibility for Practicing Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada is citing Rupa Goswami. And this eligibility, there's three levels of eligibility. There's a Kanishta Adhikari. You know, he's got little faith. You know, he's pious. You know, he understands Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But, you know, the kind of detail that we're getting into, that I'm Krishna's eternal servant, that's so strong. So his faith is weak and he can easily become bewildered, you know, if he runs into a, you know, opposing arguments. Then there's the Madhyama Adhikari. These are qualifications for practicing Krishna consciousness. And the Madhyama Adhikari, he's got very, very deep faith in Shastra. But he can't defeat all opposing arguments. His knowledge isn't fully manifest yet. And then, of course, the Uttamadhikari is strong in both faith and knowledge. So, why is that so important for the practice of Krishna consciousness? If we go to Prabhupada's definition of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, of course, Sadhana Bhakti is when we're, by the practice of engaging our senses in Krishna's service, this dormant love for Krishna awakens. That's the goal, and this is how we do it. We engage our senses, our mind in Krishna's service, and then, boom, bingo, we get it. We get bhava. So the Vaidhi sadhana, there are two types of sadhana, you know, Vaidhi and Raghunuga, but the Vaidhi sadhana, you know, the impetus, what drives him, what impels him to engage in devotional service, what pushes him through all the obstacles that he encounters in the process of advancing, is the Shastric injunctions and the orders of Guru. He doesn't have spontaneous attraction. So he's driven like this, as in military discipline. You know, the Guru says, okay, do this, okay, I do it. You know, the Shastra says this, I have faith, so I'm going to do it. So these are, you know, it's super important, you know, this whole question of knowledge and faith. Faith that Shastra is really taking us in the right direction. You know, where we want to go with our lives. So, how to get the knowledge? How to get this? You know, how to get this faith? Of course, you know, kind of the, you know, shot from the hip explanation, well, we get it by association. Very true. But that association, we have to be very selective about that association. And there's you know, kind of the Mahavakyam for acquiring knowledge in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Tadvidhi Panipatena, Pariprashnena Sevaya, Upadekshanti Te Gyanam, Ganinas Tarkadarshana. So here Krishna is exclaiming, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. But approach him, you know, in a submissive mood and render service. Two things. Don't do both of them. If you're not submissive, you're not humble about it. If you think you know everything, doesn't work. And if you don't do service, doesn't work. It just becomes theoretical then. It doesn't manifest. So there's some interesting points that Prabhupada makes in the purport. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the spiritual master will not be effective. So then Prabhupada says something really powerful. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So what is that test? What's the test of the guru? Going back to 241, I'll give you 241. There's one, like kind of like a milestone in Srila Prabhupada's lifetime and preparation. Satyutta Murray cites this in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. And, you know, he was reading the writings of Vaidyanatha Thakur and previous acharyas. And then in reading Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and 241, Vivyashyatmika Buddha, something really hit him. And that was that what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, that the disciple should consider the order of the spiritual master to be his life and soul. These words produced a deep effect on Abai, strengthening his desire to execute Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's command. So we look at Srila Prabhupada's life. What did he do? I mean, a complete focus. This vyavyashyatmika buddhi. They're just totally into pleasing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Right from their very first meeting, you know, he goes with his friend. He didn't even want to go. And his friend kind of dragged him. Oh, come on, this is a real sadhu. What was his friend's name? Narendra Malik, right. So this Prabhupada was a student at Scottish Church's College at the time, right? And so he'd had his fill with these so-called sadhus. You know, his father had invited sadhu after sadhu for lunch, and then he'd see him on the street smoking a bidi, you know, and all kinds of nonsense. So there wasn't something that he was so inclined towards. But then they go in, and because Prabhupada, you know, he grew up in Vaishnava culture, you know, they offered dandavats when they came into the room. You know, where Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was giving discourse. And, you know, before Prabhupada, you know, as they were on the floor, and they hadn't even started to rise, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave Prabhupada an instruction that followed him through his entire life. You are educated young men. You should preach the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking world. And it went in very deep, you know, right? That very first instruction. First time they met. He hadn't even gotten off the floor. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave it to him. And you just, we look at Prabhupada's life. No matter what, Gaudiya Math blows up and kept going. No matter what, two heart attacks kept going. Completely dependent, you know, shooting for the moon. Some people don't like the expression shooting for the rhino. But that's what Prabhupada did. He's just like incredible. He took full protection of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Krishna. So just like Divyanga, now he's going out on book distribution. He's got this instruction deep in his heart. Following through. From that comes so much realization, right?
That's right.
That's how it works. That's how we get knowledge. It's not just we sit down and we study. Of course, Prabhupada wants us to study. We approach his books in a submissive, humble way. And then we couple that with intense service to push his mission on. Then the knowledge awakens. The only way it works. That's it. That's the process that he gave us. That's the process Krishna gave us. And Prabhupada demonstrated its effectiveness. So that, the test of the spiritual master, how committed are we? When it gets tough, what was it? Who was that? Was it the Green Bay Packer coach? He said, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Was that Vince Lombardi? Was it? Yeah. But in devotional service, it's like that because sometimes there's very, very difficult tests. I mean, all of you, you've all been around for a long time. You've been through them. You know what it's like. So in order to persevere, knowledge is the key. That's what we control that spiritual intelligence, which is coming from Shastra, from the order of Guru. That's what controls the mind. Otherwise, you just pull all over the place with the mind. Not able to, you know, oh no, I don't want to do this. It's too hard. That wasn't an awe, you know, where Prabhupada Vyavyashyatmika Buddhi, completely focused. He accepted the principle. The knowledge came with it, and the realization came with it. So that in the fourth canto, when Lord Vishnu enters the arena of sacrifice, Pitamaraj's sacrifice, there's a description, you know, of how the pure devotee, the self-realized soul, when he speaks, His voice is impregnated with saffron dust particles coming from the lotus feet of the Lord. And those saffron dust particles inspire one to take up Krishna consciousness. And those same saffron dust particles legitimize the description of Krishna, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, using words coming from the mind. This is how it works. And then there's this whole personal and Krishna and powers. Those saffron dust particles are coming from his lotus feet, and he empowers the advanced Vaishnava to describe him. And that's what Prabhupada's done in all of his books. He's completely empowered. But it's a very personal empowerment coming from the Lord. That's why, you know, I brought this question up yesterday when Pushkar was given class. In the Krishna book, it describes, you know, after the question came out, you know, how can you describe the transcendental absolute truth with words? And that's Maharaj Pariksit's question to Sukadeva Goswami. And then Prabhupada, he had this little sentence afterwards. What Maharaj Pariksit actually meant is the absolute truth personal or impersonal? The proof is that it's personal because we're here today. You know, Prabhupada described Krishna. Saffron dust particles were there. Krishna consciousness was ignited within our hearts. We have faith based upon, you know, the service that all of us have done, studying Prabhupada's books. We have complete faith in it. So Yogashyatmikabuddhi. That's how it works. That's how it worked for Prabhupada. That's the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. Okay, so maybe I'll stop here. I'm going to read the translation again. Maybe there's some questions or comments. The living entity, the individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas described, he is part and parcel of you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all Vedic sacrifices in this world are offered, and which are the source of liberation. Any points? My chair, please.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you started by saying that we don't feel that, we don't feel that we're not the body, right? That we're not covered. You started by saying that.
Yeah.
Did you explain that, please? I must have missed it. Why is that?
Why are we illusioned into thinking that our mind is our Supreme Lord? And why are
you've just answered it. It's an illusion.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's an illusion. You know, why are we thinking we're our bodies? Itadvesha samutvena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani samoham sargayanti purantapa. So we come into this material world overcome by these dualities of desire. We want to play act. We want to pretend we're God. So we get the facility. You know, Krishna's given the mind, the intelligence, and the senses for us to engage in sense gratification, if this is where we want to be. Those same, a very interesting point, and those that write things down, this is a really nice reference. It's Bhagavatam 1:3:35. And it describes, I'll just paraphrase it, that just like an electrician, he can use electricity to heat You can also use electricity to cool. So Krishna, these energies are his, you know, the external energy. And he can actually transform it into the internal energy. The external energy creates an illusion for the conditioned soul. That's why, you know, we're thinking, oh God, I'm covered. I'm not, I am my body. I am my mind. And I'm going to act like that. This is the potency of the Bahiranga Shakti, but that same Shakti, Krishna can transform it into the internal energy of the Lord. He can change it. He can switch it around. I mean, who can say that Srila Prabhupada's body was material? I mean, people have all incredible experiences just being touched by him. Just, you know, remarkable, you know, completely spiritualized. So that's what the process will do. You know, and so that same energy, when it's transformed into the spiritual, in the antaranga shakti, brings us closer to Krishna. And through service, we can get yukta vairagya. You know, we're engaging things in Krishna's service, and this is, you know, part of that. Maharaj?
Just two things. One is, just for thinking, it becomes such a delicate thing, because the normal preaching or the normal response we give is that we're not material. We're not. We're really not affected by Maya. We're not affected, but we're just covered over by it. We always hear that expression. But in today's text, you can't even say that. According to today's text, we're not even really covered. So it just shows how there's so many nuances. When you get to the 11th canto, also there's so many heroes still in the 10th canto, and there's nuances. In the text itself, there was one topic you didn't touch on. You can say a couple of words on it. Is that all Vedic sacrifices are actually offered to Lord Vishnu? The people experience or they feel they're performing Vedic sacrifices, or even traditionally, real Vedic sacrifices were performed. But it would seem like they're being performed to so many different devatas and karmakanda. But actually it says all Vedic sacrifices are actually offered to Krishna. So maybe you could clarify.
Yeah, I mean, even the ones that are devatas, you know, if it's done properly, the ultimate beneficiary is Krishna. You know, he's the actual... Okay, I don't know the Shastic reference, but, you know, it's covered, you know, in the Yoga Ladder in Gita. That, you know, so there's kind of you know, an unknowing benefit. One may be worshiping, you know, Durga Devi, but just because the mantras include worship of Krishna, apparently, and you get association with Brahmins who may be knowing of Krishna, and then ultimately it leads one up the ladder. But the thing is that, you know, but our Vedic sacrifice primarily is a Sankirtan Japya. That's what we do in Kali Yuga. The other ones, you know, as we know, Prabhupada described, that there are very few qualified Jagyak Brahmins. There isn't anybody around that can really do it properly. You know, we go to the holy places in India, and then there's these Brahmins, you know, they're just kind of harassing, you know, to just get your money, and they'll do some little puja for you, and then they'll just really push you to give them money. You know, it's not really something that they're doing in a devotional mood. So, but that's the ultimate, direction that all these sacrifices should go, you know, to please Krishna. Yat karoshi, yat ashnashi, yat jahosi, dadasi yat. That's the verse. yata pashasi kunti tat kurusha marda arpanam. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, all the sacrifices you perform should be done as an offering to me. So that's the whole mood, you know, that a devotee should have. Everything does. That one second and the day goes by where he's not thinking about it. This is going in my service to Krishna. Avyarta Kala Tvam. Now that's something that even on a sadhana platform, we can practice. It's a symptom. It's a reliable symptom of bhava, but we can practice it on a sadhana platform. It's kind of the ultimate in time management. Don't space out. You know, just keep it going. You know, just keep focused. Get, you know, the mission's there. You know, we got to plug in. Push it on. Yes, Madame Prabhu. Go ahead, Kalasanti.
It's just a realization I've been having recently that you gave the analogy of the colloidal suspension, with the particles being our covering and the medium that they're suspended in being the pure consciousness. And I've just been seeing recently how the four regulative principles are the pillars of sinful life. They're such heavy concentrations of material activity that if one engages in those four sinful activities, there's no possibility of the separation taking place, of the particles settling and the consciousness becoming clear. And until they stop, you know, it's just not going to happen. It doesn't matter what else, whatever else you do, however much sadhana, or if you're engaging in those four activities, that separation is not going to take place. And the people in general also, they won't come to self-realization while they're engaged in those activities. I've just been thinking about that a lot.
Haribol, sir.
I love the subject of misidentification with our bodies and with our minds. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that daivihi shagunamayim mama maya dorachi, that this deluding potency, this covering potency, is so far beyond our ability to even conceive how powerful it is. Not just ourselves, but it's amazing, every living being, 8,400,000 species, every bird, every ant, every mammal of all different infinite varieties, centipedes running across the floor, they're 100% convinced I'm a centipede or I'm a zebra. When I was in Africa, that was my daily meditation. When everyone else was looking on the safaris and seeing all these amazing different animals, I was just trying to keep that strong meditation that, as you read in Bhagavad Gita, that vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini shuni chaiva sapake cha pandita samadarshana. That is, I was striving to somehow have that vision, to not become, not just misidentifying myself as my body, but not misidentifying every living being as being their bodies. To think, to actually have the realization, that's just another spirit soul, a pure devotee of Krishna, running around in the body of a warthog or a wildebeest or a fish eagle flying in the sky. It's just amazing. And so as we can't realize that we're not our bodies if we're simultaneously not realizing that other living beings are not their bodies. It's all sort of included. Just like, for example, we can't realize ourselves without realizing Krishna, because we are eternally united. You might say we're joined at the heart of Krishna. So self-realization means realizing Krishna. No question of realizing the self without realizing Krishna.
Thank you.
The same way there's no question of realizing that we are not our bodies without also realizing other living beings are not their bodies. So I guess sort of in the further answer to Maitreya Prabhu's question is, you know, because it's mentioning, as you were saying, sort of it sounds a little bit flipped, that we're identifying as if this is us, and that's the deluding potency of the Lord. It's so powerful. And the only conceivable way to come out of that illusion, jnana will not work. And I think we all realize as neophyte devotees, we can certainly get it right on a test that I'm not my body, I'm not my arm, I'm not the mind, I'm not the intelligence, I'm not the false ego. We can have some limited jnana type realization, but to truly come to the level of jnana, you have to fully, that's only by the blessing of Krishna and Guru, that that veil becomes lifted.
Madana in my chair.
I always like that, simplify things, just because my nature's like that. That there's the Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, and then Krishna says the eternal nature is the soul, so the service. And it's so subtle, because it's a subtle mechanism of the consciousness of when one deviates, the false ego is the first element that covers that nature. So it's just the consciousness that of not accepting that we're eternal servants of Krishna, that the Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema never goes away, because it's Nitya. We're Nitya like that. That's the nature. But it's just a very slight, the covering over, it's consciousness. We're the consciousness, whatever you call it, whatever the different designations are. But it's just the consciousness. And then it's, because it's not like, in one sense, we want to make it mechanical or material or this element or that element. It's just the quality of our consciousness of that we're eternal servants of Krishna. The eternal nature is called the self. So self-realization, as you're pointing out, realization is doing it. So how can you realize it? Like I read 20 books on swimming, so now I've realized swimming. You can't realize swimming unless you're in the water. So you can't realize devotional service unless you do devotional service. And of course, if you do devotional service, three things happen simultaneously. So you have direct perception. What's the other one in 9-2?
Bhakti Paresh Anubhava Viraktir. So you get devotion, you get direct perception of the Lord, and you detachment from everything else.
And the word in 9-2 is, what's the one in 9-2? Pratyaksha. But you just do it. So we're saying push the car.
So one thing, you know, in regard to Nārī Prabhu's point, you know, it's like as we advance, our vision expands. So like on the Kanishta platform, I am my body, I am my mind. You know, theoretically, I'm not. But then as we come to the Madhyama platform, then genuine compassion and the ability to have friendship, Tad Adineshu Maitri, awakens because, oh, yeah, this is Krishna's beloved servant. You know, really start exchanging on a real heart level because of an expanded vision, and then going even further into the Uttama Vaishnava platform. Yeah.
So when we become liberated, how then will we perceive our relationship with the material body?
Just as just something that we're using in Krishna's service, and it's fully Krishnaized. We're not subject to the, we're not subject to the pushings of the senses. You know, there may still be pushing, but we don't really even pay attention to it. Like it's described that someone on the bhava platform can't even perceive of the existence of sense gratification. He's experiencing so much transcendental bliss. Can't even perceive the existence of it. So, it's a whole different ballgame. We're fully transcendentalized. We're in the antaranga shakti, and all of that material energy is being used to bring us close to Krishna. That energy is no longer material energy. It's been fully spiritualized, been transformed. You know, it's not cooling anymore. It's heating. Electrical current has been turned around by the expert electrician, the spiritual master.
I found the purport to this quite astonishing, but this is the verse. It says, the body of such a liberated yogi, along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of God, and it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position, thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of the material by his own. Thus, he accepts bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. This is the one with the fan unplugged and the scope angle. So it says, he doesn't actually become contaminated by the actions and reactions of the material body. And this question says that the material body of the liberated soul is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of God is not acting due to the living force of the living entity. So that part always really caught me. It's not acting by the living force. It's simply acting as a reaction to his past misdeeds.
May
a more precise explanation be that we cease to think that we're the doer and we actually become the witness?
Hare Krishna. Hare Prabhupada.